we always recommend Shopify. It took us from an idea to a real business. We got set up, I think, in less than a day. With very little effort, we could just focus on the supply chains and the product development. Shopify gives us the ability to customize without the complexity. We can change something without introducing fragility or having to pay a developer. We're Thirsty Turtle, and we leveled up our business with Shopify.
Start your free trial at shopify.com/au.
I've always kept diaries. Ever since I was a child, I've documented my daily life in journals, carefully labelled on the sides and covers so to keep them in order. I'm on my 1,033rd journal, and all of them are kept in order on bookshelves. It's basically a ledger of my entire life. Or at least, it was. Until my house burned down, and I lost all of them. All, except for one, that I never wrote. My father and I were going through the wreckage. The burnt walls of the house had blackened and charred. The smell of smoke and burning insulation still hung heavy in the air. I looked through the pile of burned paper that had once been my journals. I saw the family photos, all water damaged from the fire hoses. At least those not destroyed by the flames. "Hey, what's this?" my father said, leaning down. We both saw the edge of something rectangular, peeking around the edge of the ruined hole. He reached his hand through a destroyed part of the wall and came back out with a dirty, smoke-brown journal. Spatters of what looked like dark, ancient blood covered the surface. I saw it was labelled 1077. That is, the 1077th journal I had started to write in since I was 6. "But that's impossible," I said, more to myself than him. "I never wrote that journal. When the fire hit, I was filling out my 1033rd journal." I knew this for a fact, because I wrote huge numbers in Sharpie on the front of each one. My father rolled his eyes. He thought keeping a diary was stupid and only reserved for girls, and he had often told me so. He flipped it open. "It looks like your handwriting," he said, handing it to me. It felt grimy under my fingers, its covers sprinkled with small patches of black mold and blood, as well as darkened by smoke. Yet, all the pages were still legible. I put it in my backpack and took it home with me. It was the only thing that had survived the flames intact that I recovered. And yet, I know I never wrote it. I flipped it open to the first page, seeing my own handwriting reflected back at me. I read the entries laid out there. With increasing horror, I read them all. April 1st, 2025. Today, the world ended. I'd driven across Arizona and New Mexico with my fiancée, Stephanie. She wanted to see the Grand Canyon, and I always said I would take her. So, when I made a couple $1,000,000 in stock options short in the market after the Chinese invasion of Taiwan, I decided to quit my job and travel. All around us spanned endless desert. The sun looked down like a blazing, lidless eye, withering everything in its intense heat. Only cacti and desert shrubs stood on the great, flat plain. I turned the radio on, but only one station came through. It was some AM station talking about the recent Chinese invasion. "China has lost an estimated 2 million troops trying to take the island," the reporter said. In response to the invasion, Taiwan authorized airstrikes on the Three Gorges Dam yesterday evening. Reports state that the Chinese Air Force has, in fact, successfully destroyed it, causing flooding and likely millions more casualties among the civilian population. Taiwan cities are all in flames as... I flipped the radio off, not wanting to hear any more grisly news. "I really need to use the bathroom," Stephanie said, breaking my reverie. I looked over at her, seeing her large, blue eyes looking at me. Small beads of sweat broke out on her light skin. Her blonde hair ran down past the shoulders in shimmering waves. "Okay, why don't I pull over right here?" I offered. She shook her head. "No, I want a real bathroom," she said. I sighed. "I haven't seen a house or store in quite a while," I said. But as if fate wanted to prove me wrong, a small wooden building appeared on the horizon. A town sign stood in front of it. Devil's Creek, population 52. The building looked like some kind of old-timey general store that had been renovated to have electricity and central air conditioning. An ancient man with a face like a raisin sat in a rocking chair outside, smoking a pipe and reflectively staring off across the great, empty desert. I glanced over to see what he was looking at. In the distance, I saw roll after roll of razor wire surrounding a massive fence. It had all sorts of signs with skulls, as well as warnings about violating federal law by trespassing. We pulled up to the store. The man finally looked over. His jellied eyes reminded me of an old dog waiting for the needle. He was a small man, no more than 5 feet if I had to guess. He wore a straw hat and a shaded flannel shirt and smelled like sweet cherry pipe tobacco. "Christ draws," he said in his fluttering old man's voice. "It sure is hot out here today." I smiled, agreeing. "What's that you're looking at?" I asked, pointing to the electrified fence guarding the apparently empty desert. He gave me a serious look. "That is where the bombs are kept, boy," he said. "The big ones, the H-bombs, Minuteman IIIs, and B-61s. Well, so I hear. People around town talk, you know." I nodded. I wondered where the silos were.
"Can I use your bathroom?"
Stephanie asked hurriedly as she came up beside me. The man nodded. "Back of the store, young lady," he said in a quavering voice. Then he returned to his pipe and his meditation. "Let me know if you need anything else." I decided to sit down next to the old man when I felt the first quiverings of an earthquake. It started small. I stood there, not knowing what to do. The old man's eyes widened and he dropped his pipe. Embers and blackened tobacco spilled out on the ancient wooden porch. "What in the blue blazes?" he started to say, when a scream of powerful engines cut him off. A burning chemical smell filled the air. I looked over to the military site and saw the ground pulling itself apart. Secret sliding panels covered in dirt opened as enormous missiles slowly gathered momentum, rising up into the air from hidden underground silos. Jets of blue flame shot out of them. They towered over everything else in the area, each 60 or 70 feet tall. Within seconds, they began to move faster and faster, lifting themselves skyward with a screeching of blue flames and smoke. Every minute, more and more came out. Dozens and dozens of missiles firing in rapid succession. Stephanie came out. I grabbed her hand and pulled her to the car. "We need to get the hell out of here," I screamed over the cacophony. Her face had turned chalk white. She followed me like a lost child. I pushed her into the passenger seat and got in, turning it on and peeling out of there. "If this is a nuclear missile site," I said, vomiting the words as quickly as I could in the panic of the moment, "then there will probably be an enemy missile coming to target it soon." American missiles continued to streak through the air like fiery dragons on their way to battle. We drove as fast as my car would go for the next 20 minutes, braking 110 and then 130 miles per hour. I had a very bad feeling about this. And then I saw it. The thing I'd been dreading. Missiles began to drop down from the sky. Not going, but now coming. I saw a streak of white shoot across the sky in my rearview mirror. A sonic boom shook the ground. And then, the world exploded. "Ah," I heard someone say. "God, what?" Then I realized it was my own voice. I opened my eyes. I felt warm blood trickling down my face. My car was flipped over. I saw the endless desert outside, now upside down. All around us, great, suffocating plumes of smoke rose into the sky. It blotted out the sun and turned everything as dark as night. I looked over at Stephanie. She was still unconscious. Or maybe she was dead. I couldn't tell. She hung upside down, her seat bite biting deeply into her shoulder. "Jeez," I groaned, trying to unbuckle my seatbelt without falling and smashing my head. I mostly succeeded. I crawled out of the shattered remains of my flipped-over car. I rose, my legs as wobbly as a baby deer's.
"Jay,"
a voice said softly from inside the car. It was so subtle, I could barely hear it. I knelt down next to the broken window and saw Stephanie stirring.
"Ah."
She spat a little blood, wiping her mouth.
"Are we okay?"
"Yes, baby," I said with tears in my eyes, looking down the road where the mushroom cloud hung over us like the blade of a guillotine. "We're okay." Luckily, we'd been camping prior to this, so the car was filled with essentials. Inside the trunk, I had a tent, sleeping bags, food, water, and toiletries. We also had some knives, lighters, and lighter fluid. Stephanie filled her backpack with as much as she could carry, still wiping blood out of her eyes from a deep gash across her forehead. But overall, I felt like we'd gotten fairly lucky. It certainly could have been much worse. If we had still been in the city, I shuddered thinking about it. I wondered if any cities still stood in the USA. The mushroom cloud continued to grow. It had a combination of bright streaks of fire and black plumes of smoke mixing in with a scorching cap. Its cap looked like it would go all the way to outer space soon. The stem of suffocating smoke shot upwards, seeming to unspool itself from the inside as it rose. We walked down the dark road in a burning world. Jets flew overhead, streaking across the sky. The echoing whine of powerful engines followed them moments later. Sonic boom after sonic boom exploded across the dead desert.
"Where are we going?"
Stephanie finally asked after an hour of walking through this apocalyptic scene. We hadn't escaped the black clouds that hung over the sky, though the smoke had started to dissipate as we got further away. I looked back and saw a figure behind us. It appeared to be a man, casually walking down the road, but his eyes seemed to be on fire. They shone with an inner luminosity, lit up like the eyes of a jack-o'-lantern. Something seemed wrong with the man, and not just because of his eyes. He walked in a jerky, twisted way. His head, which had been looking down, ratcheted up to look at me. A shudder ran down my spine. I turned away, motioning for Stephanie to look behind us. But by the time we looked back again, he had disappeared. "Away from that," I finally said, pointing to the mushroom cloud.
"Did you see someone just now? I think my eyes are playing tricks on me. I could have sworn I saw someone following us." "Maybe it's another survivor," she said. Maybe. I agreed non-committally, not telling her about the eyes. He'd been very far away, but I had definitely seen him. I didn't understand where he had gone. There was certainly nowhere to hide, unless more secret government silos and tunnels ran under the earth here. He had simply vanished like campfire smoke in a strong breeze. "What do you think happened?" Stephanie asked as she took a long drink of water. "I think we all know what happened," I said bitterly. "China started World War III. They thought they could contain the fighting to Taiwan, but they miscalculated. Once the Three Gorges Dam got blown and millions of Chinese in the Yangtze River drowned, it must have escalated. I don't know who fired first, but clearly the US and China are at war." "Maybe the war's over already," she said, hopefully. I nodded. "It might actually be. If it is, and all the cities have been hit here, and in China and Taiwan, there must be hundreds of millions of people dead already. Maybe more." Stephanie didn't say anything to this, but she seemed to go pale. "We need to stop soon. I'm tired. We've been walking for hours," Stephanie said after another few hours. I agreed. We hadn't seen a single car or person in that time, except for the man with the eyes. My feet screamed at me with throbbing blisters and sharp pains. My cell phone and watch had stopped working during the blast. Some electromagnetic pulse from the warhead must have disabled all electronics in the area, so neither of us knew how long we'd been walking. With the sky covered in black smoke as far as the eye could see, I didn't even know if it was day or night anymore. We set up the tent. I crawled in, exhausted. I felt like I must have walked for 12 hours. I took off my wet socks, got into the sleeping bag, and instantly passed out. I awoke suddenly, confused. Something had scared me. Maybe it was in the dream. But no, I still heard it. A scratching sound, light and insistent on the outside of the tent. Stephanie still slept soundly next to me. I shook her. She groggily opened her eyes. I looked at my pistol next to my pillow, grabbing it up. Its solid metal grip felt real and powerful in my hands. But when I remembered the glowing eyes of the thing and how it had vanished in an instant like a puff of smoke, it started to feel much smaller. "What is..." she began to say. I clamped my hand over her mouth. Her eyes went wide. I put my finger to her lips. She nodded, and I slowly removed my hand. Now, I could tell she heard it too. It was like someone was running a long, sharp fingernail over the outside of the tent, walking around it in circles, though I didn't hear any accompanying footsteps. It was too dark to see any silhouettes or shapes through the thick fabric. We heard a low, diseased breathing coming from outside. The rattling breaths seemed to choke on their own fluids like the gurgling gasps of a pneumonia patient. I couldn't take it anymore. I grabbed the flashlight from next to the sleeping bag and flicked it on. With my arms crossed, my gun in one hand and the flashlight in the other, I motioned for Stephanie to open the tent. She hesitated for a long moment. After taking a deep breath, she ripped it open in a single pull. Yet, no one stood there. I looked out at the smoke-blackened, starless sky. Shadows bounced and danced around the cacti and cracked pavement of the street. I heard a very subtle sound from my right, a slight shuffling of sand. In a blur, and with barely any sound, the diminutive man with the fire in his eyes scampered towards me, his shoulders and vertebrae crippled like those of a hunchback. His face only came up to the level of my chest, but he seemed to straighten and grow as he got nearer. there was a crackling, snapping sound coming from inside his body. It sounded like his bones were breaking and knitting themselves back together. By the time he reached me, he towered over me. This all happened very quickly, in the space of less than a second. My vision became filled with the hypnotizing, strobing white light that came from his head, but I glimpsed the rest of him too. He had a mouth like an infected sore. Pieces of his lips were rotted or torn away, and behind that mutilated flesh beheld a gibbering, gnashing mouth. Twisted vampiric teeth grew out of the tops of his gums, intertwining with those growing from the natural spots. These dozens of overlapping fangs each looked as sharp as a scalpel, made to slice through flesh like butter. His nose was eaten away. In its place, I saw a patch of ragged, necrotic tissue that oozed yellowish pus and blood. His skin was as dark as obsidian, and seemed to glow with a similar iridescence. "Hello there, partner," the gnashing thing said in a slow Texas drawl. I looked away from its inhuman eyes, seeing Stephanie petrified in the doorway of the tent. She held a long buck knife in one hand and a canister of OC tear gas spray in the other. I opened my mouth, but nothing came out. "What do you want from us?" Stephanie asked in a quivering voice. The creature's mutilated cheeks parted, showing more clusters of teeth growing out of every spot in his gums like a tumor. "Everything," he said in a slow drawl. "I want everything." I raised the barrel towards his head, my finger tight on the trigger. "You want to rob us? Is that it?" I asked. The creature laughed, a tortured sound like shattering bones and grinding metal. "I don't give a damn about this crap you look around. It ain't worth a damn to me. I want everything. From you and the girl. We square on that?" "I'm going to give you 3 seconds to get out of my sight," I said, "before I start." The creature's hand came up on a freakishly long arm. The arm seemed to lengthen, breaking and regrowing as it twisted towards me. I fired as it smacked me hard on the head. I saw stars and went sprawling, the pistol flying off and landing on the concrete a few feet away. The abomination grabbed a screaming, crying Stephanie from the tent, carrying her under one arm, as if he was simply moving an irate toddler. He threw her in front of him. I saw with horror, and my shot missed him. "I am the true king of this world," he hissed as he knelt down over her. "I am the endless void between galaxies and the spinning black holes that rip apart worlds. I am forever." Fire poured out of his hands and arms like lava as Stephanie lay on the ground. Her eyes went wide as the first of the flames bit into her skin. I saw her chest and stomach caught fire as if it had been sprayed with gasoline. With an animalistic strength, she jumped up, still burning. She tried to grab the man in a bear hug. The fire spread to his body, but he quickly pushed her away. The fire spread up and down her clothes, into her hair. Her face began to melt as she gave an ear-splitting shriek of pure agony. Drops of liquid fat and burnt, sizzling blood ran from her crackling, blackening skin. "I love to watch them dance," he gurgled in a diseased, raspy voice. Stephanie jumped from leg to leg, putting her arms straight in front of her body to try and keep them from the flames covering her torso. But the fire seemed to have an inner life, spreading across her flesh as if rivers of napalm flowed over her body. I grabbed the gun, running over. I put it into the back of the man's head and pulled the trigger. The fire had started to spread across his chest, but he had no facial expression. He stood there, grinning like a skull. Thick chunks of black flesh burst out. In his destroyed skull, I saw no blood or organs, but thousands of tiny, dark worms writhing and slithering. He fell forwards. A few feet away, Stephanie also finally collapsed, still twitching and screaming. I ran over to her, pulling a water bottle from my backpack. I poured it on her, but it was like pouring a bottle of water on a bonfire. It sizzled and hissed as it turned to steam, putting out a small portion along her chest for a few moments, but then the fire flickered back up. She gave a choked death gasp seconds later and stopped moving. Her body had become little more than a blackened husk by this point. I looked at the evil, inhuman thing that had done this. To my horror, I saw his hands clenching and unclenching, his legs twitching. The black worms had started to restitch his skull back together, the tiny heads poking out through the wound and moving tissue around like diligent little laborers. Sickened, I ran. The landscape had started to change. Rocky cliffs now loomed overhead, dozens of feet high. I stumbled up the rock faces and eventually found a small cave. I crawled in and with my flashlight, finished this journal. I know this will be my last diary, my last will and testament left in some rocky cave of a destroyed world. Because the true king of this world is on his way here. And he loves to watch people dance.
My advice for entrepreneurs is definitely to level up with Shopify. The platform is just never a worry. Like, I have so many worries, but the platform is never one. I feel like Shopify really thinks about how they can optimize. It just always feels very ahead of the curve. Everything is just super easy to connect and link. They really know what we need. Time and money that is saved, I can spend on other things and on growth.
Start your free trial at shopify.com.